Hi, this is John Austin, host of the Book Club on the Tantalk Radio Network. I spent 35 years in publishing, and today I want to tell you about a book that could change your life. The book is No Cash, No Problem. The author is Dave Wagenfort. Dave Wagenfort is one of the greatest barter experts in the world. He's bartered over $500 million in goods and services. If you want to remodel your home, but the cost is just too high, or maybe there's an automobile that you have dreamed of owning but thought you just couldn't afford, well, this book will allow you to do both of those things, plus hundreds more with little or no cash. Maybe you're a business owner with a cash flow problem that leads to low or non-existing profits. Read this book and see how you can increase your cash flow and your profits by time-proven techniques. The book again is No Cash, No Problem, and you can buy it now online at www.tantalknetwork.com. Click on the book and follow the instructions, or pick up the phone and call Lola at 727-441-3311. The book costs only $6.99, so do yourself a favor and buy the book today.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I'm here in the studio of Tantalk Radio Network, right here in glorious Clearwater, and I am so happy that I have in the studio with me somebody who has actually written about Clearwater in a new book called Jim Morrison's Clearwater, Then and Now, a pictorial history and collection of tales from the life of Clearwater's rock legend. And the author's name is Bird Stevens. Hi, Bird.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm so happy that you're here today, and I love your name. You sound like a rock star. When I got the book, I said, oh, maybe she's a rock star, too. Well, I'm really excited to talk about this book because for all of us who are Doors fans, it's just another added little bonus just to know about the importance of Clearwater in Jim's life. So I want to play a song here called Soul Kitchen, which it will get us in the Doors mood. Let's talk about Jim Morrison first, and then after that I'd like you to talk a little bit more about some of the Clearwater, the places that maybe don't exist anymore that people remember, because there are so many millions of people who have come down here to Clearwater over the years. They started coming down as children with their families in the winter, all right. The snowbirds, and so there's a lot of memories here in our area, and to add this depth now to Jim Morrison's life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so Bird. Oh, I just love saying that. Are you sure you're not a rock star?
No.
You could be a rock star.
Maybe.
Well, she's so young and beautiful, and she could be up there. Now, Bird, tell us, how did you get the idea for this book?
Gosh, I've been a Doors fan since I was little. I actually was a Jim Morrison fan before I was a Doors fan. I've always loved to write myself. I grew up writing poetry and short stories. And the first album that I was introduced to was An American Prayer, which is all of his poetry. So I fell in love with his words and his writing first before, you know, before I came to love the music. And I knew that he grew up in Clearwater, or at least was here at some time. In 2005, when they knocked the house down and the big article in the St. Pete Times came out, I became more interested, and I met with a couple of his college friends that he grew up with while he was here. And I got them all together at the Clearwater Library, and we just sat and talked for so long, and it was just like walking down memory lane. All their memories came back of their time here together, and I taped the whole thing, and I had like 7 of those little mini tapes filled up, and I went home and listened to them, and I said, oh my gosh, like, nobody has heard these stories, and nobody has known about his life like this in Clearwater. This has to be a book.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I just love that when sometimes that's what happens when you start writing. Just one little thing, one little word, one little idea pops into your head, and it sort of captures you. Then you have to start learning
yes,
more.
Yes, I was hooked. I was hooked.
And you did a lot of research here.
Yes, so much research.
Okay, so tell us, it started with the friends.
Yes.
And who were those?
That was Larry Palmer, Phil Anderson, and Ruth Whitney Duncan.
Okay, now just that they were mentioned in the article.
Yes.
And so that's how you found them. Mm-hmm. And were they surprised when you called them up and said, let's get together?
I think so. I know they had been all interviewed for the article, but they had not been all together in like 40 years. So this was the first time that they had all been together and got a chance to see each other and catch up. So I think that was really special. And it was just like a magical moment seeing them together and talking about their past.
It would be. You know, this is the stuff that a movie is made of.
Right.
And it's funny. Now, this book is, it's not a nut. It's a collection of stories and a lot of photographs, really, mm-hmm. that you've gotten up. And just that magical moment of having the three of them get together for the first time in 40 years to talk about Jim. Wow. I think that's fantastic. And it's an example of what all of you can do. If you are interested in writing a book, if you've been thinking of writing a book, or you have a subject that you want to, you know, it might be your family, it might be somebody famous. And it's funny that when you have this idea and you get the people together, I was talking to one woman who got family members together at Thanksgiving recently. Mm-hmm. She's been listening to the program, and I've been telling her, you know, all my listeners, write a book of what interests you, because it's just something wonderful to save these memories because they're lost. And now you've captured all of this. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the book is about Jim Morrison, but I think it's more of a history book of Clearwater, because I wanted to kind of paint a picture of what Clearwater was like when Jim was living here in the 1960s. And what it looks like now, which is so different from the world that he lived in, you know? Well, so that's why I have the before and after pictures.
Yeah,
so
I love that. That's what I love. I must say, I went on a pilgrimage thanks to this book. So I just set myself up, and I'm driving around the streets of Clearwater just looking at the, you know, most of the places aren't here anymore because we've had so much construction and everything changes. But there are the occasional place, mm-hmm. and it's wonderful. So tell us, why was Jim Morrison here? Why did he come here?
He was in Virginia while he was going to high school and going through those teenage years and rebelling against his father. And I guess his father had enough of him and shipped him down to Clearwater to live with his grandparents so that he could go to college and live with his grandparents and, I guess, stay on the straight and narrow, which didn't really happen. But that's why he was here.
And he came down, but he already had a background here in Clearwater because of his grandparents, right?
Yes. When he was, right after he was born, his dad went away, you know, with the Navy, and him and his mother came down to Clearwater and lived with his grandparents for about 3 years before they were reunited with his father.
And we should say that when Jim's father shipped him, we mean shipped him because he is his father, of course, was a very famous admiral, and involved in many, many historical events. And so, you know, it's funny, we've seen this dynamic. I was watching NCIS the other day, and I had just read your book, and of course Tim in NCIS, his father was an admiral, and they had all these emotional problems,
right?
and it was no different for Jim Morrison.
Yeah.
He had a father who was, you know, when your father's in the military, you live a very different life from most people. He was moved around.
Yeah, moved around quite a lot when he was growing up.
And so when his father shipped him here, in his very formative years,
yes,
here in Clearwater, it was an important aspect of his life.
I think so. I mean, your formative years are, you know, the most important time in your life when you're figuring out who you are and what you're going to be and testing the limits and all that. And he spent that here in Clearwater, which I think is really interesting.
So where was the house?
The house was on Osceola Avenue, which is adjacent to Fort Harrison Avenue in downtown Clearwater, right close to the Clearwater Library.
And then he went to the junior college.
Mm-hmm. St. Pete Junior College, yep.
And so tell us about, what did you discover about those years? What was he like?
Gosh, it was so interesting speaking with all the people, because I had a picture that was painted for me from the original three people that I spoke with, of who he was when he was with them. But then when I ventured out and met a couple other people that hung out with him, I discovered that he actually changed who he was and how he acted based on who he was around. I know the original three people said, you know, he was the prankster and liked to push the limits and push people's buttons to see how they would react. But then they said when he was around his girlfriend here, Mary Werblow, he was very polite and, you know, totally different person. So, and then he had the scene.
And he wrote a song for her.
Yes, the end was based on a goodbye love song for her.
Okay, yeah. Well, we have that song, so let's play a little bit of the end. And inspired right here in Clearwater.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend. The end of our elaborate plans. The end of everything that stands. The end. No safety or surprise. The end. I'll never look into your eyes again. Can you picture what will be? So limitless and free. Just of some stranger's hand in a desperate land.
That is when you hear this song now. So sort of when you know a little bit of the background that he wrote it for a girl, mm-hmm. and that he's never going to see, and for anyone who knows the tragedy of his life, mm-hmm. how it ended, and all of the hard times and really unhappy times in his life, you sort of think, oh my goodness, maybe if it hadn't ended, maybe, you know, maybe if he'd taken a different path, You know, because the talent was there. The talent, the brilliance. Most people don't understand what a deep reader he was, how very important words were to him.
Right.
And as you said, you were a poet, so you this is what really grabbed you. Not the music, the words.
Right. Which was really important to Jim. And, you know, it's said that towards the end, you know, he really didn't want to be the rock star idol that he became. He wanted to be known, you know, for his words. And I know the message of their music was really important. You know, they didn't want the commercialized sound. They wanted people to listen to the message and listen to the words. So, and he wanted to write. So that was important for him more than, you know, more than the music, I think.
And that's a tragedy of it when, you know, we always imagine rock stars are, you know, having a great life. And it's like Elvis Presley. They're really deep. They were really deep. They had deep feelings, deep emotions, and thoughts that they wanted to share. And that whole wild side of their life took over. And they died too young. They were lost, you know, way too early. Because when you see, you know, some of the singers who lasted until their 80s and 90s, and it's still so delightful to see them. And you wish that, you know, he could have gone on because there was so much he wanted to say.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's interesting that I have a chapter in the book about Jack Kerouac, who was also from here. He had a house in St. Pete, and I know Jim Morrison was a huge Jack Kerouac fan. He read... and they just barely missed paths while they were here. Jim left in 64. I think Jack Kerouac got here in 65 and frequented Beaux Arts just as Jim had. So if they had just met a little bit earlier, what would have happened, you know?
Well, that's one of the fun things about learning about people and where their paths cross, because it is interesting. Or don't cross, and what could have been. And I think part of the whole reading of this book is that you go back in time and you see that some of the pictures are really just fantastic. The collection of photos you have of the before and after, but then there's this beautiful, big, wide Clearwater beach, and it looks the same, and the people are sitting there just the same. It's wonderful. Now, tell us about... there's a chapter called Racetracks and Potato Chips. Tell us about that.
Oh my gosh, that chapter haunted me for so long. I had the original, you know, story from the three people about going to the racetrack. The racetrack story had been talked about just briefly in the St. Pete Times article, and something about Jim running around with a white fur coat on or something. and when I asked Ruth about that, she didn't even realize that that was her coat. And she was like, oh, my God, that was my coat. And they started to remember the story. And then they were saying, like, oh, yeah, with the bag of potato chips. And I kind of, like, tried to ask, but then they, like, couldn't remember or changed the subject. And I kept going back and listening to the tapes and thinking, oh, my gosh, what? Because they were laughing hysterically when they said that. So I was like, what happened with the bag of potato chips? And... I lost contact with a couple of the people, and Larry Palmer, who was one of the great storytellers that I met with in the beginning, he died in 2014, so I've dedicated the book to him, so I couldn't go back and ask him. And on my journey through this, I met a guy who I was talking to that hung out with him, I think went to school with him, and just happened to say, oh, yeah, I was there that day. And I said, do you remember the bag of potato chips? And he's like, oh, yeah. So I finally got the story that I had been waiting for to finish for, like, years. So that was really great.
So when you say years, how long did it take you to write the book?
It took me 3 years of full-time researching and writing, but 10 years from thought to finish.
Okay. Well, yes. But as I said, it is well researched, and it's fascinating to read about so many interesting things about Clearwater. Mm-hmm. And some of the places are still around, certainly the locations are. And when you were writing, the Clearwater Library was important to you.
Yes. Well, you know, Jim loved to read, and books were important to him, and there's stories of him having piles and piles of books stacked in his room. And he lived very close in proximity to the Clearwater Library and spent a lot of time there. And I thought it was just for reading, but I found out, you know, from Larry Palmer, for their stories, that they used to go meet at the library and hide in a corner and drink peach schnapps because they didn't really bother you in the library. So,
well, that exactly. It's little stories like that that are so much fun. And, you know, having written screenplays, I had a terrible time with this book because knowing the area and then with these little stories, whether it was the chip story, potato chip story, or the pink schnapps story. I mean, I'm like, okay, I could do a scene here. I could do a scene here.
Right.
It's really wonderful. Now, when you were doing the research, wow, 3 years, that's a big part of your...
A lot.
Dedicated
yes.
your life to this book here.
Yes.
When you were doing it, what was your goal other than, I mean, getting the book out? You're going to, what are you using it to? To promote the city, to promote Jim Morrison? What are you doing with this book?
My goal really for this book was just to tell the truth. There's been lots of books about Jim Morrison's life. I know when you're writing, there's a little, you have a little liberty of romanticizing stories. There's been a lot of false things written about Jim Morrison, and I really just wanted the truth. I wanted a book that was completely based on facts and facts alone, which is why I spent so much time researching, because I have all of the facts to back up everything that is in that book. All of the history of the buildings. I pulled all of the deeds to all the buildings. I spent hours at the courthouse. I pulled all of the deeds and mortgages for all of the properties that his grandparents owned. So I have proof of exactly where they were and what time period they were here, instead of romanticizing and guessing and kind of making up stuff. So I really just wanted to get a real book about Jim's life, firsthand stories from the people that spent time with him. And I love history, and I just thought it was fascinating, you know, what the city looked like when he was here compared to what it is now. You know, and I think that's important to keep the history of this little town that we have.
And I think, as you said, telling the truth, because there are so many books filled with nonsense about Jim. A lot of it's salacious just to sell books. I think having a book like this that sets him in a place where he obviously was just developing as a person.
Right.
That you want to know this. I think it really helps to understand his work better.
Yeah.
Once you've read your book and understand the streets that he walked on and the places that he went, and I just love this book. Now, I'm going to take a quick commercial break, and then first let's do a book buzz, and then we'll do a book buzz, and then we'll have a commercial break, and then I'll be back.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery. Today we are buzzing about book number 10 in the Jonathan Grave thriller series by New York Times bestselling author John Gilstrap. I love the title, Scorpion Strike. Here's the buzz. Jonathan Grave and Gail Bonneville thought the Crystal Sands Resort was a perfect getaway until this island paradise is held hostage by a band of dangerous killers. Guests are awakened in the middle of the night by gunshots and yanked out of their sleep by their captors. But Jonathan and Gail are no ordinary vacationers, and the assassins who invade their bungalow are in for a deadly surprise. They will soon discover two determined and skilled operatives who have escaped into the jungle. Cut off from his usual tactical team, Grave's only hope is bold action. Like a scorpion, Grave must strike fast and strike hard. Yowzer! Readers, what you might not know about the author is that he is a renowned safety expert with extensive knowledge of explosives, hazardous materials, and fire behavior. Hot, hot, hot! Hey, fans of Jack Reacher and my favorite, Joe Pike, Scorpion Strike by John Gilstrap will not disappoint. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more on my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With my guest here in the studio, Bird Stevens, who has written a fascinating book called Jim Morrison's Clearwater, Then and Now, a pictorial history and collection of tales from the life of Clearwater's rock legend. And it's not just a book about Jim Morrison. It's just a wonderful, really a wonderful and delightful book about Clearwater, which is, I think, one of the most wonderful places to live. So, thank you, Bird, for coming in today. And let's talk more about, some of the just wonderful places that were here in Clearwater and how things have changed.
Okay.
So let's talk. Tell us about one of the chapters in your book is called Fun and Sun Motel.
Yes, the Fun and Sun Motel. That is not here anymore. But was a hotel that was owned by Ruth Whitney's family. And according to her, the Star Spectacular was, very close, where all of the famous rock stars came and played. And that's where they would stay while they were in town visiting. So that is not here anymore, but it is in the location of where the Wings is in Clearwater Beach. That is on the property.
And now, of course, Of course, the Fun and Sun Motel is a perfect name for Clearwater.
Yes.
There were so many tourists coming down in those days, and they were all looking for Fun and Sun. And one of the things most people don't realize is that there was a great, this was a wonderful, wonderful community for famous people to come.
Right, yes.
Everybody came here. They were all down here, all movie stars and famous people. Of course, we had at that time the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel here for the rich people who came down. Mm-hmm. And then we had all these little motels, these delightful motels all along the beach, mm-hmm. just tiny places. And I know when I was a child, and living in Detroit, we used to have in the middle of the winter, they would always put up this big billboard with a photo of a girl holding a beach ball, and behind her is a little pink cottage, one of these pink cottage motels,
right?
Hotel motels, and we'd walk through the snow, and we'd be miserable, we'd be wet, we'd be freezing, and we'd look at that billboard and dream, because there it said, come down to Clearwater, Florida. And I never expect, I after I left Detroit, I roamed all over the world, lived so many places, and I never expected that one day I would come to Clearwater, Florida.
That's awesome.
And live. So it's been there since I was a child. Mm-hmm. And isn't it just wonderful, this place?
It is. It really is. It's paradise.
It is. And, and Elvis Presley played here in town. Frank Sinatra played in town. There was a lot of happening here. So what were some of the places that Jim Morrison visited here and, what was part of his life?
There was the Clearwater Library. There was the Francis Wilson Playhouse, which is very close to that as well in downtown Clearwater.
Now, he enjoyed the theater?
I was told that he would just go and sit in the back during practices and just watch, or when they would have poetry readings, he would just sit in the back and watch and take notes in his little notebook.
Now, when he was here at the ages of, 18 and...
Yeah, 18 to probably 22, 23.
He wasn't performing?
No.
He wasn't singing yet?
No.
It's funny, really. I would have thought that he's been singing since he was a kid, but he didn't. It was the words that were important to him.
Yes. Well, yeah. I asked everyone, and they said that there was no signs of singing or interest in music or anything like that. The only thing while he was here was Phil Anderson said that he used to drop him off at Beaux Arts, which was where he did just spoken word poetry, and he had a ukulele with him that he would just strum as he recited his poetry.
I'm telling you, this has to be a movie. I can't imagine Jim Morrison played a ukulele.
I know, it's weird,
isn't
right?
Isn't it? I mean, we have such an image of him, mm-hmm. that the idea of him being just... I want that scene in a movie. I think we have to somehow get you noticed by Hollywood, because they have right here such a rich three, four year period of his life that people don't know about.
Right. Yeah.
And I get so excited when I have a book that turns into a movie in my head. So, and have you thought of actually writing sort of a novelization of his life during this period?
Oh, no. This was a big chunk of my life. I'm just happy that it's out and that people are enjoying it right now. So I'm just kind of, it was just published in July of this year. I'm still new and just kind of absorbing everything that's happening with the book. So.
Well, has a tourist industry here in Clearwater grabbed you yet as a speaker?
I haven't done any speakings yet. I've talked to the Clearwater Chamber of Commerce, and so that just happened recently, so we'll see what happens.
Well, because they definitely have to have you as a spokesperson here, because it will make, as I said, because we have a generation that actually the snowbird generation today are the original Doors fans.
Yeah,
I mean, they're big fans. I mean, they have stuck with the Doors. Once you become a fan, you stay with them forever.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm sure that they would just be fascinated with all of these stories.
We'll see what happens.
Well, I hope that they do grab you. So let's talk about a few of the other places. Let's talk about Palm Harbor and Old 19 Tavern.
Yeah, that was interesting. I actually talked to Larry Palmer's wife. I met with her after he passed away, just to kind of show her the book and, you know, make sure, you know, it was okay to write, you know, his words and everything. And she told me a story that he told her, that was confirmed by a couple people, and that there was this old 19 tavern that was in Palm Harbor, which is where I'm from, so I know exactly where it is. It used to be called the Schoolhouse Restaurant, and now it's Old England Clam House or something. But the original site used to be an old schoolhouse. So it was actually an original building from the early 1900s that had changed hands a couple of times and become a tavern. And I guess it was kind of a rowdy place. I talked to the locals in Palm Harbor, and they all confirmed that it was kind of a rowdy place, and they all remembered it. And I got some great stories from the old 19 Tavern that kind of showed what kind of place it was and, you know, what you would see when you were there. And I guess Jim did his normal poking thing and was trying to get reactions of people and ended up getting thrown out of a window of the old 19 Tavern. So... that was kind of interesting that it stretched, you know, into another city around this area. So,
well, the thing is, I'm having fun today. The interesting thing you mentioned poking, Jim's poking. What was? Let's talk about a little bit about his his personality and this defiance that he had, of course. I suppose some, as we said, with a father being an admiral, his life was not easy as a child. So tell us a little bit more about his family life. What sort of led to this poking business of his wanting to just needle people a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a psychologist. I don't know what, you know, makes people tick, but I know that he was interested in just finding out what made people tick, you know, what could he do to get a reaction out of people? You know, there's a fine line between brilliance and crazy, and maybe he was a little of both. I don't know. But I do know that he was just very interested in people and how they worked. And, he was known from the very beginning to do things to get a reaction out of people, you know, from his parents to his girlfriends growing up to his friends, people that he didn't know. I don't know if that led to some of his writing. Maybe the responses that he got helped him in some of his writing. I'm not sure. But he was known to do these crazy things everywhere that he was. Everyone that I spoke to said the same exact thing.
And, of course, as I said, his father was very famous in American history.
Yes.
Because he was... Can you tell us a little bit about his father?
I don't know a whole lot. I know that he was really important. You know, he was the youngest rear admiral that they had in the Navy, and he played a key role in a lot of the naval activity of that time. I think because of his position... You know, it must have been difficult for him to have a son that was so outrageous and defiant, probably a little embarrassed, you know.
And, of course, it's one of the things I know that his father listened, I believe, to one of his tapes and suggested that he find another career.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he had no talent.
Right.
You know, so it's hard. I know... You know, we hear these stories, and we think sometimes if things could have been different, you wish so much that Elvis Presley was alive, you know, and still singing, you know, because and somebody like Jim who had this talent, and it must have been really frustrating that, you know, some people just didn't see it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Jim wasn't the best singer.
No.
But it was his,
it was the word.
He was just captivating.
He was captivating,
and he was charming, and he just had control of a crowd of people.
And that's why when you hear his singing, it does evoke a certain feeling in you, different from other rock singers, mm-hmm. because I think there is that feeling of depth to mm-hmm. him that, and I think even his fans didn't know anything about his serious side, his love of poetry, his love of philosophy, mm-hmm. and the depth that he wanted to. If his life had been different, I'm so sorry, all you people out there, but drugs and it didn't cut it. You know, it blew his mind, and it's a shame because he was brilliant, you know, I think that when we look at somebody like that, and we have this feeling that gee, if it only could have been different,
yeah.
for him. Now, when you were writing this book, as you said, I mean, this is a lot of work. And how did you, once you got the first three stories, then how did you contact everyone else? Did they give you more people to contact? Is that how it happened? Or did you have to dig, did you go around and say to every old person in town, do you remember when you...
No, I mean, the stories that I got, as I listened to the tapes, they would mention different people that they were with. You know, they would say, oh, when we were at the racetrack, this person or this person was with us. And so then I would try to track down them. And then I would track down more people who would tell me about other people that were around or that went to the school at that time. And it was very difficult tracking people down. Unfortunately, a lot of people are not around anymore. Because it was a long time ago. So a lot of the people were not around anymore, or, you know, their memories were just fading of that time period. But it was like a wild goose chase trying to track people down. This one guy, Andy Anderson, in fact, was one of the ones that I had a horrible time finding, and I never found him. I do have an Andy Anderson in my book, but it's not the Andy Anderson that they were talking about. So it was strange. I was looking for this Andy Anderson that apparently was a Clearwater cop at one time. They do have an Andy Anderson there, but it's not the same guy from Jim's time. And then I did run into another Andy Anderson who went to FSU, FSU with Jim. But it's still not the same original Andy Anderson that I was looking for before. So it was difficult finding people, but I did it.
You did it.
I did it.
You
yeah.
did it. Tell us about one of the chapters. It's called A Holy Place and Unlikely Occupants. Tell us about that one.
Yes. That's a quick, short little story. But the history of St. Cecilia's Church is just amazing. You know, this town was so small. When it first started, and you know, in the early 1930s, 40s, and there were not any Catholic churches around for people to practice, so they would have to drive to Tampa, which I can't imagine the trip to Tampa from Clearwater, with, you know, not having the roads that we do now and not having the vehicles that we have now, and I don't, you know, the bridges were not constructed. So St. Cecilia's was the first Catholic church that was in this area. And there is a story of Jim Morrison showing up at the Catholic Church with his girlfriend Mary for a Christmas Mass. And as Larry came in late and couldn't find a spot to sit, he noticed that Jim Morrison was in the church, which he thought was odd. And he said he turned around and, you know, people greet each other, nodding their head or, you know, waving at him. And he said Jim Morrison turned around and flipped him off right there in the middle of the Catholic Church.
Well, and St. Cecilia is still here.
It's still there, yes.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful building.
It
and
is.
I have a big history of St. Cecilia's Church and the original church and how much it's grown into what it is today.
Now, when we talk about Mary, do we know what happened to Mary?
Mary was a huge part of Jim's life here. But she did follow him to California when he went, and what happened there, I don't know. But it is said that she is a very private person that lives in a trailer in California and does not want any contact with people. And I already had my hands full with everything in the book, and I just thought that that would be a huge can of worms to open up. So I touch on her briefly, but I do not really go into great depth of their relationship. So,
well, that's probably maybe for the next book. Sometimes what happens, you get obsessed and you stop for a while, and then you get obsessed again.
Yeah, no, I've felt it, and I'm trying to hold it back.
Well, you could become the Jim Morrison, I don't know, expert. Right. Now, tell us a little bit about of course, he went to college here in Florida, too. Mm-hmm. Many people don't realize that.
Yes.
And what did he study?
When he was at St. Pete Junior College, it was mainly just, like, the basic classes. It wasn't until he went to FSU that he got interested in more of the arts and the theater classes that, you know, ethics and history and more theater-driven programs when he was at FSU.
And when, did you talk to anyone who went to college with him, actually, through the college?
Yeah, I talked to a lot of people. There was a group of people that lived in the first house with him, including Brian Gates, who wrote the foreword for my book, and was very good friends with him, did a kind of a cross-country hitchhiking trip with him to California from FSU. I also spoke with George Greer, who is a local here, was a very important judge here. He was in the house. I think there were six people in the house, the Kalavokas brothers, Brian Gates, George Greer. I spoke with them. They lived in the first house. I also spoke with a couple people that were friends with his roommates from another house. He lived in a total of five places, I believe, when he was at FSU. He didn't last very long in the first house. I guess his antics upset the roommates, and they agreed to kick him out. And then he was known to live in a dilapidated trailer behind some housing. And then he lived at the Cherokee Hotel in Tallahassee, which had a kind of a seedy past that I guess he was interested in. I spoke with one of his professors, who was fantastic. He was very good friends with Jim and actually made a couple trips down to Clearwater with him for the weekend. And they went to some concerts. I think they saw Ray Charles in concert in Tampa while they were here. And he was actually the one that helped Jim when he got arrested in Tallahassee and with that whole thing. So.
Yes, and you have Jim's mugshot here.
I do.
Okay. Let's play, I think, Jim's most famous song, the one that once it gets in your head, you can't stop it.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire. The time to hesitate is through. No time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire.
Okay, well, everybody knows that song. That's one of those songs gets in your head, and you're singing it all day long.
Right.
And what is your favorite of his songs? Do you have a favorite?
I have so many. I love Spanish Caravan. I don't know what it is about that song. I love the guitar in that song. But I have so many. So many favorites. But I really love Spanish Caravan.
Okay. Well, I really, really want to thank you so much, Bird, for coming in. And your name is Bird Stevens. I love it.
Thank you.
I think it's just a fantastic, fantastic name. How do people find the book? It's available where?
It's available on Amazon. It's Jim Morrison's Clearwater Then and Now. It's available in paperback and ebook on Amazon. If you're local, you can contact me at jimmorrisonsclearwater@outlook.com, and I can meet up with you and get you a book.
Okay. And if you have any stories about Jim Morrison, if you were here and you knew him and the stories aren't in the book yet, you have to contact Bird.
Yes.
And she will be happy with the second edition.
Oh, fantastic.
That's what you need, right? To get, more, it's always fun. I'm sure that people will, you know, once they have this book, you're not selling it like in all the local hotels and all of these places yet?
No, I don't have it in there as of yet. I'm still working on going around and finding places that'll, take it and stuff. It is available in St. Pete. There is a great little local store in St. Pete called The Merchant.
Okay, well, I'm running out of time, but because it's been so much fun talking to you and remembering Jim Morrison and his life, I want to thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
And I'll follow up with you. I have some ideas where you could sell this book because it's wonderful. Remember, one of the joys of life is to see or to hear your words in an audible book, which is always fun, and to see your words on paper. And, wow, the time just ran out today. Anyway, Happy New Year to everybody. This is my special New Year's program because I wanted to talk about Clearwater, glorious Clearwater, Florida, here at Tantalk Radio Network Studio, which has been here a long time. How many years, Ed? Do you know? A lot of years. Okay. Many tears. And Big Ed here in the control room. Thank you, Ed, so much for everything. And Happy New Year to you and Happy New Year to everyone. Thank you again, Bird. Bye-bye now. Thank you.